welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and of the sports presented in this movie, all of them sound like ways for me to get hurt, so I'm not particularly interested in any of them. But around the time this movie came out, I was playing a lot of 1080, so N64 snowboarding is the one that I would choose to do.
I would like to stay at home in the warmth and play video games. That is my sport. I mean, I'm right there with you. I played a lot of Cool Borders on the PS1, and I am Matthew Gatos, and I've never done any of these sports. I think I snowboarded once down a hill a couple times, but it was like a 20-foot hill and not really a challenge.
My name is Marines, and I can't swim, and I hate the snow. But if I had to choose one, I don't know. Snowboarding, that seems less killery to me.
And I'm Sari Riley, and I've seriously injured myself both surfing and skiing, so snowboarding, I guess.
This week we are discussing Johnny Tsunami, and Mari, you're gonna tell us what actually happened, because it's not anything like what Sari said.
Absolutely not. And I was trying to remember all the different directions that Sari went, and I couldn't.
Moana. It was Moana.
Hawaii.
Yeah.
You got Hawaii. That's yes. It. In reality, Johnny Tsunami is actually the absolutely true story of how snow is the worst. We follow a boy named Johnny Kapahala. He lives in Hawaii, which was correct. Good job, Sari, with his mom and dad and his famous surfer grandfather known as Johnny Tsunami. So the name Johnny Tsunami about this, you know, the movie is named after like the grandfather, not necessarily the kid, which is a little confusing. But Johnny Jr., the younger one, is also a very good surfer, which we understand in an opening scene where we watch a stunt double surf for a very long time. Unfortunately, Johnny's father, Pete, is not there to see him win the competition. At home, we see that things are tense between Johnny and Pete because he's very serious and he likes to code and he doesn't like the water. I don't know. He doesn't like surfing. Things get worse for Johnny with the announcement that his father's job is taking the family to Vermont and Grandpa Johnny is actually staying behind in Hawaii. Pete has a bad relationship with his father also and views him as nothing more than like a beach bum, a surf bum. Pete is trying to put some distance between Grandpa Johnny and Johnny Jr., hoping that, you know, little Johnny will not also be a surf bum. Johnny sticks out pretty bad in his new school, but mostly because he wants to keep wearing her Hawaiian shirts around the school. And everyone's like, what are you doing? In an effort to fit in with the preppy boys at his new private school, he agrees to do what the locals do, which is skiing. He fakes knowing anything about skiing, and one of the mean preppy boys pushes him down a mountain, which seems like a great way to murder somebody. it just was extra violent. I don't know. Johnny survives, though, and he swears off skiing because that was not fun for him. Much like Sari and surfing. Johnny meets a boy named Sam on the bus, and he is intrigued by Sam's snowboard. He also learns that private school kids are called skies and they ski, and public school kids are called urchins and they snowboard. Despite learning the rules of the way things are done, Johnny wants to learn how to snowboard. He thinks it will be much more like surfing. Sam agrees to teach him how to board, and we get lots and lots of shots of Johnny learning and falling into the snow. Johnny kind of invites or kind of uses like reverse psychology on another skier to like invite her to come over and try boarding. She's the headmaster's daughter, and also to steal Matt's thunder a little bit here, she's Xenon. Xenon gets overconfident on the slopes, and she also ends up falling off the mountain. Sam falls while trying to help, so it's up to Johnny to board back down and find help for them, which he does successfully, and Sam and Xenon are safe. Unfortunately, the headmaster, Xenon's dad, is not too happy about any of this. Johnny and the prep boy, the mean boy, Brett, end up getting into a physical fight, not even on like the school campus, but the mean boys like tell on Johnny. And so Johnny gets in trouble with the headmaster for getting into this fight. The principal gives a long speech about how private school kids can't hang out with public school kids. And Johnny's parents like don't say anything. Like no one protests this classist bullshit. Everyone's just like, I don't don't know. His mom is clearly not happy with it, but she doesn't say anything.
I was just going to say, at least his mom does appear to think that this is fucking insane, yes. But she doesn't say anything, which is weird.
No, everyone's just like silently accepting that the principal's like, you can't hang out with the poor kids. I don't know. Sam breaks the news that his father, a sergeant in the armed forces, is being promoted and relocated to Iceland. Sam is moving in a week, so Johnny is sad. He gets even more sad when his father tells him to, for real, stop having hobbies and being good at things and hanging out with urchins. Johnny wishes his grandfather were here because his grandfather actually understands him. Johnny and Sam run away to Hawaii, where Grandpa Johnny does indeed welcome them with open arms and wisdom and understanding. He refuses to send the boys back to Vermont until they are ready. Pete and the mom, Melanie, have an argument about how Pete used to be fun, and now he's sucking the joy out of everybody's life. Johnny returns the favor and gives Sam some surf lessons. They have a great time, but both boys realize that they need to get back home. Grandpa Johnny brings them back to Vermont, and then Grandpa Johnny and Pete have a heart-to-heart about being different and how you can't push a kid to not do something he really wants to do. The Johnnies go snowboarding together, and Johnny Jr. is amazed to find out that Grandpa Johnny already knows how to snowboard. They decide to go on the best runs of the mountain, which are over on the skier side. So they run into the skiers, and Brett and Johnny have another showdown about how it isn't fair that they can't all share the mountain. Johnny proposes a race, Brink style. First one to the bottom of the mountain gets to say how they split the mountain. And I've already declared that I hate snow, so I don't know anything about snow or like mountain rights and how they work, but I'm not entirely sure do teenage boys get to decide how the mountain is split. If Johnny wins the race, then the skiers must share the mountain with the snowboarders, but if Brett wins the race, then Grandpa Johnny, he offers up the Tsunami Medal, which is a prize given to the best surfer in Hawaii. Brett mostly says yes to this, I think because Johnny is very upset about it, but I don't know why you would want a medal for the best surfer in Hawaii and you're a skier. But anyways, they agree. Even though Brett is a cheatery cheater, Johnny still wins. And there's a big like party at the end because Pete is now, I guess, down for the cause. Him and Johnny made up. It's revealed that the mountain was owned by two brothers who were fighting, but they inherited the mountain together and decided to just split the mountain in half. Skiers are one side, boarders on the other. But now they have seen the error of their ways, and they're going to reopen the mountain, and anybody can ski or snowboard wherever they want. The end.
As somebody who comes from snow, I do have to tell you that is accurate. That is how snow mountains work. They are decided upon by young teen boys. That is the rules.
Yeah, here in Montana, that's how we do it.
Yeah.
Which mountain were you given, Matt?
Well, see, I lost the race, so I was not given a mountain.
I see.
Yeah.
It checks out.
I lost my mountain rights long ago.
All right, Matt. This cast is up to all sorts of stuff. Tell us about it.
They are.
Or was once up to all sorts of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. This is an unfortunately sort of a heavy one.
No. Oh, no.
Yeah. There is some heaviness that we will get to in this, but I will not start with that. We'll start off with the director of this movie, Steve Boyum, also directed the classic film Meet the Deedles, if anyone has seen Meet the Deedles, also about surfing, but he was mostly a stuntman and a coordinator for films like Apocalypse Now, True Lies, Mighty Ducks, and Groundhog Day, which is a great mix of work. We then have Brandon Baker, who plays Johnny, young Johnny. From what I can tell, he looks exactly the same, which is a little upsetting to me as an aging man, because looking at his Instagram, he just looks like Johnny from the movie with like in a suit or something. Like he just looks like man Johnny. We then have, as Mari mentioned, Kirsten Storms, who plays Emily in this, who was Xenon. And as we talked about in the Xenon episode, she has been on both General Hospital and Days of Our Lives for a very, very long time, like 15 years or something. But yeah, this is not going to be the last time we will talk about her. So expect more updates on her General Hospital and Days of Our Livesing in the future. Next, we have playing the grandpa, the actual Johnny Tsunami. We have Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, and he is maybe most famously in Mortal Kombat playing Shang Tsung.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And more recently is in the show The Man in High Castle and lots of other things. And he actually has a pretty like active Twitter account, which I did not expect. We also have Yuji Okumoto, who plays the dad, Pete. I recognize him from the film Better Off Dead, which I don't know if any of you have seen, but it also culminates in a ski race down a hill.
It's been very weirdly typecast.
Yeah. Better Off Dead is a very, very strange movie. It's like a cartoon brought to live action. And there's a lot of things that just don't make sense, but you just accept them in this universe. There's two brothers in this film. He is one of the brothers who did not speak English, but learned English from watching sports, like Wide World of Sports. So he only speaks English in a Howard Cosell impression. So like a classic baseball announcer. So whenever he shows up, he's always like, "And today we are here to compete." And it's very weird, but he plays that character, which was very charming to see him pop up in this. He's also the bad guy from Karate Kid 2. He's in Inception. And more excitingly for me personally, he owns a Hawaiian food restaurant in Seattle that I plan on going to next summer.
Ooh, that's so exciting.
Take pictures.
Mm-hmm. It's called Kona Kitchen for those interested in going there. There's two locations in Washington State. Next, we had Mary Page Keller, who plays the mom, who is still acting in things like Pretty Little Liars and Scandal. And just she's been acting forever and is still popping up in things pretty much every year. Next, we have maybe the best name amongst this cast. And I didn't even bother looking up what he's up to now because his name is just perfect. And I just wanted to mention it. The guy who plays Sam's dad, the sergeant in this film, his name is Silk Cozart.
Yes, that is excellent.
That is also all I need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, he's an extremely cool man, and that's it.
And like I said before, we have to end on a bit of a heavy note because Lee Thompson Young, who played Sam, the friend in this, you might remember from Famous Jet Jackson, Rizzoli and Isles, Friday Night Lights, or Smallville, and a bunch of other things. He actually died by suicide in 2013. And which I had forgotten, but then was looking up the cast and was like, oh, yes, I do remember that happening. That was very sad hearing about that. There is, however, the Lee Thompson Young Foundation that his sister has set up in his honor that promotes mental health literacy because he struggled with depression and bipolar disorder later on in his life. So you can go there, buy a T-shirt or donate and support and help out the Lee Thompson Young Foundation.
That is a bummer. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I knew there was a news story about him in recent years, like something had happened and I couldn't remember if it was like he was shitty or something or whatever. And then so I looked that up and I was like, oh right. No. I do remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I was partially looking stuff up while you were talking. Did you talk about the Together Kid?
I don't know what that means.
Noah Bastian, one of his friends, one of Johnny's friends, was on Together, the MTV. There's like MTV made a movie and then a show about a like fake boy band. It was like the movie and the TV show was like an NSYNC spoof.
This is sounding familiar.
They had one song that together, you plus me equals us. I know my calculus. Yes.
You plus me equals us.
How do I not know these things? This seems like right up my alley.
Baffled that you do not know this. That's why I was like, did you mention the Together Kid? Because like obviously Matt knows about this.
No, so unfortunately.
Anyway, Matt's gonna have to watch Together the movie and you will spot one of, I think he plays one of Johnny's friends in Hawaii, one of his white boyfriends in Hawaii. I don't want to say one of his Hawaiian friends.
Yeah.
But
one of the two friends that look they're like the same floppy haired tan boys.
Yes. Johnny Tsunami, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this one as a kid?
Yes, a bunch.
Same. Yes, I watched it a lot.
I definitely saw it, but I have basically no recollection of it to the degree that both first when Xenon showed up and then when Jet Jackson showed up, I like gasped. I was so excited because I didn't even remember that they were in this movie. So yes, but like barely remember it.
Nope.
Classic. So did you like this movie?
I did. Things about it I liked more than some of the other DCOMs we've watched. I ranked it third on my list for those who are interested. It bumped just above Brink, but it's still below Xenon and Smart House. I liked it a lot. There are some really like good emotional moments, and I kind of was rooting for, like, I think I was shipping Johnny and Sam while I was watching it. Yes. More than I was shipping Johnny and Emily. Like, they run away to an island paradise together and they buy matching hats. Mm-hmm. Come on. Mm-hmm. But I think at the same time, there were things that brought it down a little bit for me. Mostly that out of all of the movies we've watched, I think this has the lowest stakes of any DCOM yet. So I just, there was moments where I was like, wait, why is anyone fighting over anything? Nothing is like really that important in this movie other than like the dad and son relationship.
And that dad and son relationship, oh man, I have a hard time knowing how to describe my feelings about this movie. I generally liked it. I would not want to watch this one again because I feel such a visceral contempt for this dad. Like, I was mad
for
most of this movie. And like, I was, you know, I don't know, like, I'm mad at him because I'm empathizing with Johnny. And so like, I guess the movie is I'm feeling the things that the movie wants me to feel. But like, I did not like it. I was not happy. I was furious with this man for making all these terrible decisions and not explaining any of them to his son. Like, oh, in kids media, that is a big gripe for me, especially because this is not a problem that I experienced as a child. Like, my parents were super communicative. And so when parents don't talk to their kids, I can't handle it. It makes me so upset.
It's interesting to me. I think we're going to start like being able to slot DCOMs into certain like larger categories. Like, there's the weird magic DCOM, and then there's like the sports DCOM.
Yeah.
And we will eventually get to like the very special message DCOMs in the future. And those are like the ones that I know are coming or have already existed. And so this is like a very straightforward sports DCOM where it's like, I don't know, a kid's really good at a sport and you have a big showdown at the end, and that's kind of the story, and it is what it is. But that said, I enjoyed it. Like, what's not to love about a good sports DCOM? It was a little like simple, I guess, compared to some of the other like stories and plots or whatnot, but it was fun. And also, I really like Johnny Tsunami, the grandpa. He was full of wisdom and joy, and I think that having him there, it made the father even more like annoying to me. I just, he was a very bad dad. And
he sucks so much. Yeah, I hate him.
He sucked a lot.
<The worst. laughs>
I made the joke at the beginning of like my recap or whatever that it was a story about Snow being the worst, but I almost said that it was a story about like a bad dad learning to be less bad, because that felt like the true core of the movie. Was that like he was a bad dad and he kept making decisions that were like impacting Johnny, and then at the end he like learned to be a little less bad. So
to a certain degree, that goes back to Matt's point about the stakes, though, in that like Johnny didn't really have to learn much of anything or grow in any sort of real way. Like, the major learning and growth was his dad, but like Johnny is the main character, and so I think that is part of what's happening there. Like, what are the stakes of the movie? Like, it can be small, it can be like a small family story, but the thing is that even within the family story, our main character isn't the one who was doing the learning or the growing.
Yeah, he's right from the start. Like, you're like, yes, Johnny, you're the best. I agree with everything you're saying.
And even when his dad is like, we're moving, he's like, okay. And he's like resigned about it, but he doesn't like throw a tantrum. He just goes with it. And you're like, Johnny, how emotionally mature of you. I appreciate that.
When I was 14 and my family moved me across the country, I cried. I was furious.
This is very interesting to me. I was in my feels this whole movie. This is my favorite DCOM that we've watched so far. And it will remain my favorite DCOM. I think Like, I think in the way that Nicole was describing Xenon in her feels, this one, this movie is in my feels. Mm-hmm. I love a half Asian protagonist. Mm-hmm. If there's a media with a half Asian protagonist, I will either love it or hate it because I'll criticize every element of it or just be like, yes, this is it. This is representation. And I, in the way in which his dad was bad, it was just like so real to the experience. Like, so my mom wasn't that way exactly. She wasn't the, you must be, I don't know. She did say I should go to business school and learn economics and stuff like that, but was never the I know better than you type of parent. But hearing the experience of so many of my friends who have first generation immigrant parents or who of like Eastern Asian cultures or other mixed race kids with one white parent and one Asian parent, just like the, we know what's best for you. We need you to succeed. I'm a good computer scientist. And so you must be a good computer scientist too and support your family. It was just like, ah, that's like the perfect kind of bad parenting that resonates. And of course the grandpa's going to be a cool beach bum because there's generational differences. And I don't know. I loved it being the dad's story. And I loved it also because Johnny was himself, like unabashedly himself, despite that parental influence. And you could see that he could like take refuge in his mom. And his mom saw him like trying to fit in and trying to go with the flow and trying to like make both of his parents happy, which is very much my experience when I was like being sent to a different high school away from literally all of my friends because my parents thought it would be a better choice for me. And I hated it at first. But then I accepted like, no, they actually know me and they sent me to an artsy high school and I had to make new friends, but it's fine. And so like Johnny going to the other high school and like trying to fit in and trying to, I don't know, become friends with the popular kids and then falling in with the urchins was like, that's me. That's what I did my whole life was trying to fit in with the popular kids and then falling in with my real friends who were nice to me. So for very many specific reasons, it was just like, huh, I love this movie. I would watch it again and again and again. That's all. That's my rant.
I will say that in a lot of ways, by like focusing on the dad and by Johnny being like a really good kid and fully formed character, it shirks a lot of what you think it would do. Like, you would expect Johnny to like try and fit in with the cool kids, and he does go skiing, but then he's immediately like, no. And then, you know, he doesn't get intimidated by like the mean kids. He just keeps calling them bra and like carrying around his snowboard. It's like totally like fine with him. So I did appreciate that in the sense that we, you know, you go in expecting a very specific kind of story, and Johnny Tsunami is like, nah, man, sometimes parents suck.
I think part of why the parents sucking bothers me so much more now is that obviously I am closer in age to the parents, you know? And so it's like, there's a thing of looking at it and being like, what the fuck? Like, my peer in this film. Like, why are you being like this? Mm-hmm. But I agree that in general, Johnny as a character, I loved. Like, he's a delight. I think one of my favorite things to encounter in these DCOMs in general is how earnest most of these protagonists are. I love it. I'm so delighted by it.
I do want to alleviate your fears, Nicole, that unlike Halloween Town, in this case, we are not the same age as the parents.
Oh, thank God.
Yes. The actor playing the father was 40 when they made this movie. Oddly enough, Johnny Tsunami, the grandpa in this movie, the actor was 49 when they made this movie. So only 9 years difference between father and son.
I was wondering about that because it was like, he looks very young for a grandpa. Yeah.
He's like ripped and he's like surfing. He's like, that is not an old grandpa.
I love Johnny Tsunami. Maybe it was because when like little Johnny called and he was just like in a hammock, like, chilling. I was like, wow, I love him. I want that life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really like that as a message of the film, too, where it's like, I don't know, your dad or someone is going to be telling you have to do what is going to be most prosperous in your life. His dad is capitalism, saying you've got to work really hard and then you'll be happy because you'll be able to support your family. But really, I just want to be like Johnny Tsunami Senior. I want to get to a place in my life where I can relax on a beach, go fishing, call my grandkids and be like, hey, what's up? Come visit. I'll treat you to like a fire pit or something like that. And that's the attitude that Johnny was taking towards life too, where it's like, I just want to be happy. I want to do whatever. Like, I'll work hard in school. He always said he had to do his homework, but he just wants to be happy.
Right. All right, Sari, I'm persuaded we love a decom with a socialist message.
Yeah.
I feel like Johnny Tsunami is 100% the kind of grandpa that if somebody came to him and was like, I'm turning into a fish, he would know what to do.
Yes, he would.
So this is in line with all of my aspirations.
I love that he just lets them, like, lets the kids make up their minds. Like, I think that's a really good, one of those moments that doesn't, like, punch you in the face of, like, pay attention, this is important. Mm-hmm. But I think for kids watching this movie and seeing, like, an adult treat them that way is a very good moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I teared up. I had emotions because of this movie when he was like, he's a smart kid, he'll figure it out. And then they like were walking together on the beach and Johnny was saying something like, you know, or after the whole discussion where Johnny Tsunami's was talking about waves and you've got to ride the waves and waves can be difficult. And then Johnny Jr. was just like, you know, I think I need to go back. I think I can't abandon this wave. And then he was like, you really are my grandson. And then I teared up. Oh.
The Johnny Tsunami and Pete heart to heart was really touching to me, especially because Johnny Tsunami was like, I'm sorry, you know, for the ways that I wasn't a good father. You know, I raised you in Hawaii right next to the beach and told you you could do whatever you want, but whatever. I'm sure there were shortcomings there, but they're like little heart to heart about, like, I don't know, being a parent is hard. And you want what's best for your kid. But then just gently nudging him into letting Johnny Jr. kind of figure out his own way. That was very touching.
And also related to the parents being touching, when Sammy wanted to talk to Johnny about how he had to move away, his mom just like gently pushing Pete into the house and be like, no, let the boys talk. That was also really like lovely and touching parenting moment. And the fact that he just moved somewhere, and this is a whole story about moving and class differences and different lifestyles. And so the fact that Sammy had to talk to his other teenage boyfriend and be like, hey, sorry, I'm moving away to Iceland. I know we're really good friends. Let's run away to Hawaii together, I guess. It's just it's so fun. Wow.
They're so sweet and pure. Like, even when he's like training him, like, he just met this kid and he's like, you know what? I'm going to stick through and like teach you how to snowboard, like, no matter how long it takes. And then Johnny does the same thing for him with surfing when they go to Hawaii. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Sam is my favorite character in this movie. His patience with this kid that he just met is like, by the time that Johnny is patient with him, that's like his friend. And also, like, this is a kid who did all this stuff for him. Not that I doubt that Johnny Tsunami or Johnny, whatever, that little Johnny would be good and pure in this way. But like, Sam, I love him. He's so precious and so pure and so good.
He had some of the funniest lines in the movie, too, like having his hat. And Johnny was like, I don't have to wear this. And he was like, no, you're not cool enough for this hat yet. And then he got him matching hats. Oh.
There's a moment when like one of the bully kids like tries to get involved in the fight between Brett and Johnny, and Sam stops him. He's like, you know, you don't want to mess with me. He's just like very good, very funny, but like still defending his friend.
Sam's dad is also only on screen for like two scenes and he's great. I don't know if it's because Pete was so not great that you're immediately like, look, a good dad. Yeah. He was just so like, I don't know, cool and loving. And they have that moment where like Sam's dad picks him up after the fight, and then Sam's dad is like really understanding, and you see Johnny in the backseat looking like sad because he knows he's gonna go home to a not cool dad. And I was like, oh no. You're right, Johnny, your dad sucks.
Well, the contrast is also like even more clear because these are both dads who have to move for their job and they're handling the situation in such different ways. One thing I wanted to bring up that Mari mentioned in her recap is the bad stunt doubles.
Oh yeah.
So bad.
Because there is a lot of times when you're watching this And like, especially early on when you're like seeing Johnny compete in this surf tournament and you're like, that is a 40-year-old man out there on that board who is like 6'2". There is no way that is that 14-year-old boy. And especially later on when they all go like surfing together, it's very clearly four grown men. And I think they even had like a I think they had like a person of color being the stunt double for a white person in this movie at one point on the surfing scenes. And I was like, no, I can, that's not the same person.
It was great because when we watched Brink, I was like super paying attention because they had all of those shots with like our actors clearly skating. And I was like, what's going on? So I was like, here we go again, going to pay attention. And I was like, you know, I don't need to pay attention. I can tell those are stunt doubles. The end.
The cliff stunt was impressive, I think. Like when they fell off the cliff and were almost dying, the kids dangling stuff wasn't necessarily like that complicated or like a shooting situation or like that impressive, but they like had this super wide shot of like people really hanging on a cliff and like dropping a snowboard and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's where you can tell this movie was directed by a stuntman, because he actually wanted to like show people hanging off the side of a real cliff.
I felt that way about a lot of the skiing and snowboarding scenes too, because there were a lot of imperfect skiing and snowboarding, because it's one thing to have a stuntman go and like just go really fast downhill skiing down a mountain, but like the snowboarding, there was a lot of like falling over and getting back up and still going. And I thought that was very cool. Very clearly not a kid doing it, but
yes,
still like, this is impressive athleticism. Yes. I can't imagine Johnny doing this, but it's fun.
That first skiing scene, especially like when I was watching that, I was thinking of like, oh, to act like a bad skier, you have to be a really good skier to be able to like pull off these little moves of like swerving between people and like going through a diner and all these things. Like you have to be really, really good to look really, really bad convincingly.
And to look really bad without hurting yourself. Yes. Because that's my problem. I'm a bad skier and then I hurt myself because my ankles go weird directions. But he can, like, whoever was the stunt double could look like they were a bad skier and presumably be intact.
I'm a bad skier and I don't hurt myself. I just don't stay up. I just go down. Immediate collapse.
You know, I've never been snowboarding or skiing, so I don't actually know that I'm a bad skier. I could be a great skier. You guys don't know. You have no proof of
Wow.
You could be like Johnny Tsunami. You just jump on and you're like, hey, I'm great at this.
Who needs help? Who needs saving? I can ski down the mountain for this.
The line when Johnny is in the cafeteria and the woman says, would you like peaches or pineapple? And he says pineapple, and then gets like the slop on his plate after you'd been seeing him eating like fresh pineapple. And that like struck me to my core. All this boy wants is some fresh fruit, and now he's in the middle of freaking Vermont and can't get it. Oof. That's all.
Yeah, I love how like the word Hawaiian is so big on that can of like, no, look, it says it's Hawaiian.
This week, in honor of the end of this movie, we are talking about other stories where our protagonists run away. Matt, what is your favorite runaway story?
I have like one and a half that I want to mention. One, because I've actually seen it and it's very good. The half is because it's something I'm currently watching and I can't vouch for the rest of it. So my first one is the movie Inside Out, where, I guess, spoiler alert for Inside Out, at a certain point, the little girl runs away from home. And one, Inside Out's a great movie in many, many ways, but particularly in the running away scene, I'm a Pixar junkie, I guess. I don't know what how you want to call it, but I've looked into a lot of like the makings of these movies, and specifically in Inside Out, they try to make that like upsetting and very real, and it feels very raw and emotional, like so much so that they switch from like a very steady camera on a tripod type of thing to like shaky cam and handheld so that it looks more visceral and real. And I think that like that feeling like makes you scared for her in a way that obviously it's upsetting, but I think it's, I think a lot of kids movies do the sort of Johnny Tsunami thing where it's like, let's run away. There'll be no complications. We'll just sneak onto a military plane and nothing will go wrong.
Right.
So I think showing the realistic side of that a little more was something I really appreciated about Inside Out. And my half is the TV show Castle Rock, which I just recently started watching on Hulu. And one, I love the show so far, but it has a little bit of a mystery about a kid running away in it that, again, can't vouch for the whole thing because I don't even know the answer to the mystery yet, but I enjoy that aspect of it so far.
I also have two, which I feel like Matt and I are the ones who always like, yeah, you said pick one, we got two. But
classic.
But I have one that I used to watch a lot as a kid. So we were like criminal rewatchers as kids too, which probably shouldn't surprise you if you know anything about me and my media consumption. But we used to make my dad like go and get the same like three videotapes from the store all the time. One of them was Wild Hearts Can't Be Broken. We've, like, my sisters and I watched this movie so much. It is also a Disney movie, I believe, but it's based on the story of a woman who was a, like, she did diving horses. So the story is about a girl who basically runs away from home after she is like, you know, her family is poor. So she's being sent to an orphanage, basically, but she decides to run away and join like a circus of sorts, like a carnival. And so she watches a woman doing like the horse diving and decides that she wants to do it as well. So she starts diving with the horses, but goes blind. So she has to figure out a way to keep doing it. And I have not watched it like recently, but I've seen it so many times that I could put in the tape today and probably recite this line for line. So it was very formational, I guess you could say. And it is a classic, like running away to the circus is like classic runaway story. So the other kind of like classic runaway story is like kid running away from home and like falling through a portal or like magical land. So one of my favorite book series, which I'm sure I've mentioned before, is the Fairyland series by Catherine M. Valenti. And it is about a girl in Kansas who her father is like fighting a war, unnamed war. They don't tell us what. And she's got like her mother has gone to work because all of the men are fighting the war. So she's very alone and things are very bland and gray for her. So when a fairy comes and like tempts her into running away, she runs away. And the rest of the story is like very large. She's in this like fairy tale land and it's five books or whatnot. But people constantly remind her, like, you ran away from home and you didn't even look back. And she has to like, the guilt keeps growing on the fact that she like ran away from home and didn't even look back. So she contends with that a lot throughout the story as well. And I just love this story. And if you love fairy tales and portals and flowery writing and runaways, I guess, because that's the discussion topic. The Fairyland series is perfect.
Can we not gloss over the phrase horse diving?
Yeah.
Because what's horse? What is horse diving?
So it was like old timey that you would like erect these platforms and the rider would like ride on the horse and like gallop and then dive off of the end of the platform and they would have to train the horses obviously to do like the dive and then the swim. I don't know. It was the mid 1800s maybe, or like late 1800s, early 1900s, where this was a thing. I don't know what to tell you. I didn't make it up.
I'm so this just like seems like one of those things of like one person said it and no one else said stop, don't do that, and they're like, all right, I'm gonna do it. Like, throw that horse off that thing, go for it.
Okay, wait, I just looked it up. So this one guy invented horse diving exhibitions because he was on a bridge
by accident
which partially collapsed. His horse fell, dove, yep, into the waters below, inspiring Carver to develop the diving horse act. So his horse fell by accident one day and he was like, that was cool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, so good.
I just found a quote from the Humane Society about it when stopped doing it. The president said, "This is a merciful end to a colossally stupid idea."
Yes.
I mean, it's based on a true story. The woman who used to do this horse diving, she also went blind. Like, that is, like, the basis of the true story. So it was, like, not a safe thing, but it happened.
Okay. My one thing is...
Wow. Okay.
My one thing is a book called From the Mixed Up Files of Miss Basil E. Frankweiler. I just remember reading this. So I read a lot more books as a kid, shamefully, than as an adult. But this is about an 11-year-old named Claudia who feels underappreciated by her family. So she convinces her 9-year-old brother, Jamie, to run away with her and live in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And so it's mostly a book about how they're sneaking around this museum and avoiding security guards. And then they also get wrapped up in a mystery because a rich old lady, Miss Basil E. Frankweiler, donates a Michelangelo, or like says it's a Michelangelo statue, to the museum for like a ridiculously low amount of money. And so everyone in the museum's like, is this real? Is this fake? And so Claudia gets to do like child investigator skills and becomes friends with this eccentric millionaire. And it was just very sweet. And I think as a kid, I also probably wanted to run away and drag my brother with me to do something fun like this. I never did. But it was fun to live vicariously through this book.
So my favorite runaway story is also like my favorite books. Much like Mari's answer, this is something that I have definitely talked about repeatedly all the time. And that's the Historic Materials books. There's like layers of runaway going on in this. Like Lyra first, like, doesn't properly run away. She like is, you know, taken away, but then she'd actually for real runs away. And then later in the series, she meets another kid who also for real ran away. And they go on a big epic adventure across multiple universes and multiple worlds. And I think by the time this episode goes up, the HBO adaptation, the first episode, will have happened. So I don't know. You can catch me on Twitter either screaming about how good it is or screaming about how bad it is.
Definitely screaming.
Definitely screaming. Like, for yeah. Sure. This will be happening. Sort of to this like larger point, there's a Philip Pullman who wrote the books. There's a Philip Pullman quote that I very, very much love. And it's like something to the effect of, as Jane Austen would have put it, it is a truth universally acknowledged that young protagonists in search of adventure must first ditch their parents. And that's, yes. So runaway story is often a like founding premise of like child having an adventure story. Because otherwise, like, where the fuck are the parents?
Being the worst, like Pete Capahala.
Like Pete!
Damn you, Pete.
Now it is time to share all of the lessons that we learned from Johnny Tsunami. Matt, what did you learn?
I learned that you should always be the Pono you want to see in the world.
I don't think this movie was trying to teach me this lesson, but I learned that snow is the worst.
I learned that you should celebrate who you are right now, or find someone who will do that for you or with you.
That's really sweet. I learned that it's apparently super easy to sneak onto a military transport plane. So I don't know why I'm being a chump paying for all my airline tickets. I could just be doing that instead. And now it is time for Sari to guess the plot of our next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we will be watching Genius.
This is like one of the least helpful titles you've given me.
It's true.
They're all
it's
profoundly true. Unhelpful, but this one especially is just like, it's an adjective.
I enjoy the phrasing of that too, that like it's on me. It's like,
yeah.
Something that I personally have done to you.
How dare you, Nicole, as the host, give me this garbage to work with to sculpt my masterpiece.
Do you want to start with the tagline? Do you want to get that, have that?
Okay, I'll give a rough sketch of what I think it is without the tagline, and then I will.
Okay.
I think Genius is the story. We haven't had a girl protagonist in a little while, I think. So it is the story of a young girl who is extremely smart, good at robotics, and her dream is to become a supervillain. And the plot line is her realizing that that would be a bad thing, and she can use her genius for good instead of evil. Okay, can I have the tagline? I just wanted to get a completely blind guess out there so that people can know that I'm doing my job.
Uh-huh. So the tagline for Genius is, to fit in, Genius Charlie Boyle added another side to himself.
Ah, shoot. Okay. to fit in, added another side to himself. Okay. Maybe then this is going to be a con. Okay, I liked my movie better. Please write this movie so that I can watch my young girl, super genius, become a villain, but not. So revised, this movie stars a young man named Charlie Boyle, who is 13 because everyone in DCOMS is 13. It's like a teen coming of age thing. Another side of himself. It's just going to be a boring. This is going to be a boring movie now. Okay, he's just like a very smart kid. Maybe he is like in all the classes with seniors in high school, and they're all like, what are you doing here, you little crappy kid? He's like, I just like calculus. But then his parents, who are very wholesome, good parents, to contrast with this current movie, encourage him to, I don't know, like branch out his interests. And so he becomes really, really the new side of himself. He falls in with the theater kids and the artists of the school. And at first he's like, you could be doing this better with programming and math. And he's like very rigid in his thing. But then he finds a weird, goofy, found family of friends and realizes that he doesn't have to just be the smart kid his whole life. And instead of going to college, he decides to join the circus. And finds this new side of himself where he helps engineer more structurally sound circus tents and performs with his newfound performing skills.
I'm once again sad that we're not going to watch Sari's movie.
Yeah.
You can join us next time and find out what Genius is actually about. Thank you all for listening to Cooler Than Homework. If you are enjoying this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it if you would tell your friends about the show. We would love to hear all of your thoughts about this episode. There will be a post up at snarksquad.com/DCOM, or you can find us on Twitter at DCOM Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Muddiness.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you, as always, to Stefan Chin for the theme music, and we will be back again next time with Genius.